I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
Oh, I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week. We hope you enjoy the episode. Well, I have to say, mate, it feels quite nice to be home.
It feels lovely to be back in a nice freezing cold studio.
No, but don't you agree? Like, it's familiar surroundings.
Yeah.
I've missed this.
Me too.
Australia was great. But
no, it wasn't.
Did you generally not enjoy Australia?
No, honestly, mate, and thank you as well for sorting it all out and whatnot.
Thank you for coming.
No, we always have a good time anyway. It was a good laugh.
It was a good laugh, yeah. But... yeah, I like sitting here with you, mate.
Yeah.
You know, we have our little chats, we moan about the weather. It is as great as the live events were and have been this year. It's just nice sometimes just to natter away with you and...
yeah.
Anyway, well, that's what we're going to be doing today.
Good.
I hope you're all happy that we're back in our usual surroundings in the studio, like Tony pointed out. It's a little bit chilly, but we've got the portable radiator blasting behind us.
Yeah.
Twiggy's in the bed next to me, shivering.
Literally.
This is miserable. But we're going to power through the cold and bring you a fairly regular episode because, yeah, it's been a while through all the live events in Australia and then the live events in the UK before that. It's felt like ages since we've just sat down and had a bit of a natter.
Well, it's been a month, easy.
Easy. And we have a lot to catch up on because, well, not only has a lot happened in the automotive world since we've been the other side of the world, but also we had some experiences in Australia that we didn't really talk about, didn't have a chance to talk about. And they were quite big experiences.
Some of them were epic.
some of them were epic. So yeah. Let's launch straight in because... right at the end of our trip, we went to visit the incredible Lee Collection. And I have a couple of main channel videos still to come from the Lee Collection visit. But whilst we were there, you essentially became a motor journalist on like Evo Car of the Year Day.
I did.
And just got to jump in and drive... well, all the cars you've been wanting to drive all year.
Whatever I wanted, basically.
Whatever you wanted.
Literally.
Which is the sort of hilarity of the Lee Collection.
Yeah.
Just before we get into it, to clarify, in case you don't know who the Lee Collection are or what we're talking about, this is a private collection in Perth, Western Australia, which has popped up in the last few years. My good friend, Josh... who's a very, well, I think he still is a good photographer. I was going to say was a good photographer. Still is a good photographer. And ended up working there.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of got this lucky in to the collection. And it's 180 cars now, I think they said.
It will be by the end of 2024.
Okay, 180 cars by the end of 2024. And, I mean, it's just not only every supercar you can imagine... but it's the most open and welcoming supercar collection I've ever heard.
And they are the coolest guys you're ever likely to meet.
Just so generous, yeah. So chilled, so laid back. And it is a case of, what do you want to drive? Now, I mean, they don't literally walk up to any person in the street.
No. So
we've somehow been lucky enough to sort of end up on the inner circle. But if you are part of the friendship group, they just seem to hand keys to anyone and everyone.
And I... obviously just entering that, I couldn't believe our, I use the word blasé lightly, but they just went, well, what do you want to drive? Well, all of them, please.
Yeah. I literally was like, I could spend a year here literally. And make a video every week and I still would not have got through all the collections. So tell us, what were the, I think it was three cars in total that you drove?
Yeah, so I drove AMG Black.
AMG GT Black Series.
812 Competizione.
812 Competizione,
which
Ferrari.
Surprised me. But and 765 LT.
I mean, big hitter cars.
Big hitter
and
cars.
And cars that we've kind of spoken about a lot on the podcast. So let's start. Let's go through it in order. Let's start off with the AMG GT Black Series. Now, I had especially arranged this.
You did.
Because I know that you've been, well, you've had your eye on that car really ever since it came out.
Oh, I have, yeah.
You've previously owned AMG GT, GTS, GTR. GTR Pro.
Yep. Well done.
the Black Series. Did you ever have any of the convertibles, by the way?
No. Okay. I'm not a convertible man. I had an SLS back in the day, remember?
Yeah.
So okay, I have an affiliation with fast front engine Mercs.
But you hadn't had the chance to get up close or get behind the wheel of a Black Series yet. So that was when I was making the plans with Josh, I said, look, can you ask the team, could we definitely at bare minimum take out the Black Series? And he said, yeah, no problem at all.
Yeah.
So, and that was our proper driving day as well. We went up into the Perth Hills.
We did.
Got a little unlucky with the traffic and stuff. But anyway, talk us through your experience.
Well, where do I start, mate? So starting from getting in it, yeah, essentially, all very familiar, all very Mercedes, obviously. The thing that always annoys me with that era of Mercedes is that stupid infotainment system.
Mm-hmm. Feels so dated
now. It feels dated. It's not touch screen. It's got a fiddly, like iDrive twoggle pad thing, which is horrible to use, especially when you compare it to a modern Porsche or a modern Lamborghini. Maybe not so much a modern Ferrari because they're a disaster.
Too many touch screens.
Yes, it's a disaster. But yeah. Merc could probably do better, but the AMG Black was probably the last of the older generation before they slot all the new stuff in, right?
And this is the thing, like, I think we should just tangent on this for a second, because we, spending so much time getting in and out lots of different cars, we talk about touchscreens and infotainment a lot. And there's a big benefit these days for some things not being touchscreen, as you just touched on, pun intended. Ferrari have gone too far in the wrong direction, everything is touchscreen. Yeah. I still like the odd physical button, especially for air conditioning, things that you're going to use regularly that you don't want to have to be going through a touchscreen or sub-menus for. But the problem with that older generation Merc tech is I think it's overly complex.
Yeah.
So not only is there not some functionality which you kind of want or expect to be touchscreen, like Apple CarPlay or your music and things like that, but it's just fiddly.
It's a menu in a menu, mate.
It's a menu in a menu, and to access things, and the buttons are always in a slightly annoying place. And that's what I think we mean when we say, you know, it's not touchscreen. We're not saying we want everything to be touchscreen.
No.
But there's some things which you would expect in 2023 to be touchscreen.
Especially when you think that's a big ticket car. It's a £330,000 car list. And up until recently, they were nearly 400 grand on the used market, you know. So it's a big ticket car, you know. So instantly when I got in it, I take that aside. All felt really, really familiar. All familiar Merc. Great big long bonnet. Not too dissimilar to the DRs and the Pros. I felt very at home straight away. I knew where everything was. We goes out the garage. Obviously, we start driving on what we would call like an A road or a highway in Australia.
Yeah, dual carriageway.
Dual carriageway.
Like that,
yeah, that sort of thing. And listen. The elephant in the room with that car is the noise. It's all people talk about. Oh, the noise is that not that good. And yeah, you're probably right. The noise isn't as it should be for a big thundering V8. But let's not forget, guys, all these modern cars, they never sound as good as the older stuff anyway now. Things have changed. I know you can put an exhaust on it, but it didn't sound terrible. I don't think it sounded terrible. It's dead quiet outside.
Yeah, that's going to be my point.
Yeah, but I'm not inside. I'm not outside. I'm inside.
Yes, they have done a good job to create a sound environment inside the car that makes you feel like you're in a big thundering V8.
Yeah.
I think most people have only experienced that car from the outside.
Yeah.
And it is insanely disappointing. It's a wet fart from the outside.
Yeah,
and there's a black series. You know, even when we're in the Lee Collection's warehouse and you go to start it up and it just goes...
Yeah.
You're like, come on. That's where the disappointment lies, and I will not let that go. It's a black series. It's human.
But I completely understand, but... The association with Black Series now has completely changed. The old SLS Black Series, the C-Class Black Series, they were monsters, mate, and didn't go in a straight line. This is a completely different kettle of fish, this new car. It's a precise... what would the other word I'd say? It's very honed in...
Yeah, focused.
It's focused track car. It's not of the old. So I get the noise thing, and actually inside it pumped through the speakers. It didn't bother me or not bother me. Do you know what I mean? It is what it is. I always look at modern cars and I care what they drive about. I care about the brakes. I care about how it turns. I care about all of that stuff more than noise, essentially.
Yeah, the thing is, as you say, as a driver, it's definitely nowhere near as bad as it is from the outside. And so few people have been fortunate enough to experience it internally.
Yeah.
That's why. So you're right. If you owned the car, how upset would you be? I don't think you'd be as upset as a passerby.
Absolutely
or someone
not.
At a car show.
Yeah.
And I do believe the Lee Collection had an exhaust on that car when I drove it last year. And they took it off.
Well, Josh says he took it off for me.
Yeah. He wanted to give you as an authentic
experience
as possible.
That's what he said, yeah.
Good man.
He's a lovely man. Yeah.
Okay, so you've already touched upon the fact that this is a very different Black Series. It's honed in, it's focused, it's purposeful. So when did you start to discover that? Could you tell that straight away out the box? Or when did you start to go, oh wow? Because you had certain expectations, I'm sure, for the car.
Very high expectations, obviously. I knew it was special straight away, and we always talk about that 100-yard thing, and I knew it was a proper car anyway, but I kind of already knew that anyway because I'd seen them on track before and I'd seen them about. So I already knew it would be a proper car because when do the Germans, when they make these track special stuffs nowadays, when are they not good? They're bang on. It's a car for me, that car. It absolutely ticks every box what I look for in a car, almost. So my expectations were met from that respect. I could tell it was very dialed in, yet a bit subdued.
Okay.
Initially. And then when we started to get up on the hills... I obviously got the car loads more, but was a little bit disappointed. I'll come back to it, but I thought, this actually is a little bit of a dead instrument. And I don't know whether, if we go back to the noise, whether it's because of the noise, but like I said, I was never really that bothered about the noise, but it turns out I was in the wrong settings. Like most of these modern cars, like my M3 Touring, like most of these modern cars, Porsche less so, because there's not too many settings with Porsche.
You just
rock up and go. But most of these modern cars now, you've almost got to set them up before you get going. So I started to play around with the... You know, the driving modes and the traction controls.
Because there's what? There must be...
10 modes.
Yeah. I mean, there's a Race Plus, I think, is the lariest or race.
Yeah,
I
so forget. They're... flipping hell, there's normal, sport...
Sport Plus sport Race or plus Race Plus?
Race and then individual, I think. Something like
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Anyway, there's millions of them.
Yeah, annoying amount.
So, obviously, it wasn't my car, so I was trying to be as respectful as I could. I know they're allowed to do what you like, but... I always like to drive other people's cars with a bit of respect. So as we were driving around, obviously I was following you in a certain car. Can I say?
We're going to come on to that in a second.
Okay, fine. Yeah. And then Josh was in front in the 812 Competizione. So I had a lovely view. And I'm driving the car, and we're then starting to get into the hills. So I'm switching the Malentino, and it's starting
what
to
cut.
The Malentino? Malentino. So I'm switching the Malentino on the steering wheel.
Malentino. Sorry, I don't know why I made me giggle. Keep
bastard.
Going.
So, yeah. so I'm switching that, and obviously the more I switch it to the right, it the car's coming alive. And then as I started to really get on, we started to push on a bit, there was like, I felt the traction control coming in too much. So it was really, it started to bog down. And I'm thinking, well, that's annoying. So I then switched it all off, basically. And then at the time of my life, it was like one of the best cars I ever drove. So it's like, flipping hell, this is unbelievable, this car. It's so fast. And it's really weird how the power comes in, because you think it's really linear. Then it goes mad towards the end of the revs. Unlike quite a lot of other turbocharged cars, it has a power band and then goes again towards the end. So that took a bit of getting used to, especially for turbo, because they're always so linear nowadays.
Sure.
So that was good. Really, really fast. Brakes, amazing. Obviously, I love a car with good brakes. I started to get a bit of heat in the tyres as well, and I just thought this car is a real precision lap time. It's a proper bit of kit. The front end was amazing, but it still wasn't. And I said this at on the day. It's still not as dialed in as our car, as our cars. Mm. I honestly do not know how Porsche have done it, but. The
front end on the 992 GT3 and GT3 RS, it's hard to understand.
It is literally, and no matter what I go in, because I own that particular car, I always compare the front ends, and it wasn't as good. But and then when you think, well, the Merc's got a big engine at the front, and it is set up differently, undoubtedly faster than the GT3, obviously. But I loved it, mate. It's a real.
You said earlier that you felt a little bit cold, a bit of a dead instrument
until I turned it up.
Fine, okay. So that's at that point. So it's the sort of classic German thing, is it? Of just like, you're not ready for this. You don't know what you're doing.
It's why when we always say that the Ferraris and even Lamborghinis to a certain extent. They're special at 30 mile an hour.
Mm.
That Black Series isn't special at 30 mile an hour.
Interesting.
It's just a really good car.
Yeah.
You've got to wind it up.
And did it feel very similar to a GTR or GTR Pro at the slower speeds?
No.
It still felt different to those.
You could tell you was in a different car. It's a completely different car.
For good or worse. Because when we went out last year with the cars, the boys bought a GTR Pro and a GTR, I think, and the GTR Pro was a bit leery, had a big exhaust, and they all preferred the GTR Pro because they said it felt a bit more in your face at slower speeds.
Yeah,
you know, just a bit more gnarly, a bit more like character to it at the slower speeds.
Yeah, the Black Series, and a lot of that's always to do with noise, right? Mm. You know, Lambo, especially Ferrari, to an extent, they have that noise and that burble at 30 mile an hour, and that's what gives it the character. The Merc's dead quiet, yeah. Apart from the noise that's pumped through the speakers, obviously. So I didn't really get that. I could just tell it was a real proper bit of kit,
yeah.
And it is, but it's like not most modern cars now. It has two or three personalities.
Yeah. Well, but I think that's one of the biggest selling points for that car. That's what blew me away is that it is a fully fledged track weapon, as you say, lap time annihilator, something that we could have taken on that Austrian trip and you would have been ecstatic, but probably even more ecstatic than you'd been in the GT3 because it's a cruiser as well.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's literally, I could have done, and because it being German, I could have done the autobahns in that car in more comfort than the GT3, gone round the track probably faster, and then driven home and it being absolutely fine.
Yeah, loads of bags in the back.
Nice, like, and quiet.
Yeah. And it looked amazing on the road.
That's what I was going to ask you. I know we spoke about this because I was obviously following you. I know you was in something pretty special as well, to be fair. But They look mega, don't they, when they start coming up behind
it's
you.
It's so aggressive. And they've always looked good. I remember when you had that GTR Pro and you followed me out of the old studio at the Duke of London, and I was like, that thing looks amazing. But that Black Series, it's so wide.
Yeah.
You see the wing and you were just coming snaking up behind me. And I was like, very, very cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we got to the top of the hills. I was doing some filming. And for the drive back, you were given the opportunity to swap cars and jump into the Ferrari 812 Competizione.
Well, Josh just said to me, do you want to drive the Ferrari back? Well, I said, sorry. I said, you driven the Competizione before? I said, no, of course not.
No one in the world has, Josh.
Yeah, Josh, there's only a certain amount of them, and I've only ever seen two. He said, well, there you go then. So I literally just drove it back.
I mean, and obviously, Josh is incredibly kind, but as is Lawrence. I mean, you know.
Unbelievable.
They're just here. I mean,
I'd met him once at that point.
Yeah. We'd had like a little drink at dinner. And then literally, the next day we're driving all his cars around. Absolute hero.
I'd not even met him.
Oh, no, that's because we landed. You'd not even met him and you were driving his cars.
Driving his cars,
I mean,
it's
just the best. I mean, that whole team, just the best people in the world.
And then when we met him, we were coming to come.
How was your day?
We said, how was your day, guys? Go, car's all right? So, yes, thank you.
Yes. We went flat in all of them.
Yeah, we did.
And he loves it. Anyway, so, yeah. Now, okay, let me get your thoughts initially on this. So, 812 Competizione, because of the lack of media around that car, understandably, because Ferrari doesn't need to review them, you know. I mean, it doesn't need people to review them. They're all sold and they couldn't care less.
Yeah, yeah.
I just have felt like there's been less hype around it than the TDF. You know, when the TDF came out, everyone went nuts. It was the scariest, craziest, wildest car in the world. It had this reputation. It sounded the nuts. Like, just, I was like, TDF, TDF, TDF.
Mm.
Since the competition has come out, I've just been a bit like, I'm not sold on the looks of the coupe.
I like it.
I know you do. Mm. It's big. It's big.
It's
car.
It's a big car, but so is an 812.
It's not, again, let's touch on sound. It's not as aurally impressive as the TDF and the cars, but you know, side it.
It was getting out of a Black Series.
Yeah, fair. And I don't know, like, I'd spoken to Shmi about his experience. I spoke to, I think, Paul and Seb drove one in LA. Yeah. Like, everyone was like, yeah, it's like just a bit of a louder, like, 812 Superfast. And I was like, no one had told me, no one had told me that thing is the nuts. Like, no one was like, this thing is the bomb, apart from Raffaele Di Simone, who's Ferrari's test and development driver. So I should probably have listened to him rather than anyone else.
Yeah.
So, long story short, I actually turned down the opportunity to drive that car on that day. There was a bigger reason as to why. We'll come back to that. Yeah. But Josh did offer me first, do you want to drive it back? And I said, no, I'm good. And then he said, well, Tony, do you want to drive it back? Yeah. So you were way more excited than I was. And after you'd driven it, I regretted the decision. But talk to me. So jumping inside, is it that same lightweight, special Ferrari feeling that you get in all of that? Did you jump in and go, oh my God, I'm in something real?
It's the same feeling I get when I always jump in a Ferrari, mate. Whether it's
any
lightweight,
Ferrari, okay.
Just go, yes, I'm in a Ferrari.
Yes. Yeah. I've made it, or at least Josh and Lawrence.
And then, and then to the left, you've got that Competizione written on the dash, and you instantly know you're in. I didn't even need to start it up. Mm. You knew you were in something special. So I starts it up. Instantly a big V12 roar. Yeah, again, we go back to it, slightly muted, but that's the world we live in nowadays. That's the way it is. It's never going to be like a TDF. And not going to want to kill you like a TDF, because there really isn't any or many cars in the world that drive like a TDF or want to kill you.
Drive. I think that was the scariest thing about it. They were just...
Even an F12 wanted to kill you.
Yeah, fair.
You know, the Ferrari don't really make cars like that anymore because they want to sell their customers new cars. They don't want them dead, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So the 812 is very tame compared to the F12 and the TDF anyway. So, but driving it straight away, and I said to you, I think it feels way different to an 812. It is, of course, it's a better version of an 812, and it's got to be. But my comparison when I was telling you was like the difference between a normal 488 and a pistol. There's a 20 or 30% difference. It's better. Is it worth the 1.5 or 1.4 million pound price tag? Probably not. But is a TDF worth £1 million? No. There were 400 grand new. You know, that's just an inflated price, essentially. So, did I like it? It's a mega, mega car. It's a proper bit of kit. It's way more civilized than what I expected, probably. Does it still feel like a stripped out special car? Yeah.
Interesting.
For sure.
Yeah, as I say, my expectations have been not low, because I know it's a Ferrari, I love the 812, but I just wasn't there like going, of all the cars in this garage, that's the one I can't wait to get behind the wheel of.
Yeah.
But then when you got out at the end and you were like, woo, I was like, oh, damn it.
But I get that with all Ferraris, though.
I would too.
Exactly.
I just don't know why. I'd written off that car probably unfairly or unnecessarily. But let's just clarify as to why I didn't take the opportunity, because I'm sure you're going like, oh, Sam, what an arrogant dick, turning down the chance to have an 812 Compton Journey.
He was in an electric car.
That's because I was in a Tesla and I just really wanted to know. That's because I was driving a McLaren P1.
Well, fairly outrageous.
I mean, what a joke. I mean, just to go back to the whole, like, guys, what do you want to drive?
Yeah,
I was like,
literally.
The P1?
Yeah.
So, this was a silly moment. We landed from Sydney, got an Uber to the hotel, dumped our bags, went and found Josh, and I got into a P1, and we went
pretty
up into the hill.
Away, so yeah. From one aeroplane to another.
Literally, when he was like, oh, do you want to drive anything else? I'm like, I'm
good.
I'm not really sure when I'm next. There's a tiniest of chances I might get to drive an 812 Compton Journey at some point in my life, given the amazing opportunities I get. I don't think I will get a P1 opportunity, so I'm just not going to get out of this car.
Don't work.
Well, people just don't use them, and they don't work in the battery. So there is a main channel coming on the P1 experience, my second time behind the wheel of a P1, but for a longer drive, more of a chance to try and understand it.
Yeah,
nearly 2 hours. I say we got pretty unlucky with traffic and stuff, and as you pointed out, this wasn't a press car that I could feel a bit more confident to push on. It is a privately owned car, and at that point we hadn't seen Lawrence, so I didn't want to be like, oh yeah, no, really good day, I did crash the P1.
So please at least let me pay for your dinner.
We were spending 3 days with them, so I didn't want to take the piss entirely. So yeah, main channel video coming on that, but you know, I wasn't being the arrogant stuck up YouTuber douchebag you might have thought I was being by being like, I don't want to drive your Ferrari. I was in something which at the time I thought was a little bit more special, but I regretted the opportunity nonetheless.
Competizione is probably worth more money.
I would say definitely worth
the
more.
The P money.
But it's not about the money, dude.
No.
You know, it's about just
the first time
else.
I've ever heard you say that. Been out all the time I've known you. It's not about the money, mate.
It's all about the money.
It's all about the money.
That's why this week we've been sponsored by... No, I'm joking. Anyway, so long story short, we had another couple of amazing days. More of that content still to come on the main channel. But I want to touch on our sort of final, I guess, few hours driving cars in Australia, because at the end of last year, when I went and did that paternity leave content, which went out at the start of this year when I visited the Lee collection, the last thing we did on that trip was go for a big drive with a lot of the cars that were in the collection at the time. We must have taken 20 or 30 cars for a big old blast. Everyone was jumping in and out of other things, and I didn't film it. And genuinely, it was one of the best experiences of my year.
Yeah.
And this happens quite a lot. We spoke about it. Most of the automotive experiences I have when I don't have to pick up a camera are the best experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I've done some amazing stuff on film, driven some incredible cars, done the adventures like taking the 360 to Tenerife and things like that. But the really moments that stay in my mind are the ones I'm not filming, because I can actually focus on the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm not thinking, what's the angle like? So I was keen to try and repeat that if we could, because it was such a cool day.
Yeah.
And I said to Josh, like, is there any plans to do a big drive? He said, oh, yeah, actually, on Saturday after your live event, we're thinking of going on a drive. And I said to you, Tony, I said, we have to go on that.
Yeah,
like, even if it means leaving the event a little bit early and being a tiny bit rude to the amazing people that turned up, we do not want to miss drive. We're going. Because it's just fun. And as I say, Lawrence tends to get a load of his friends and everyone jumps in whatever cars they want. Literally, it was... It was like a
free-for-all.
Yeah, free-for-all.
Yep.
Like keys in a bowl, you know, that kind of free-for-all. Yeah. And it's like, what does everyone want to do?
The windscreen.
So people are like, can I take that? Can I take that?
Yeah,
so we were trying to be super, we were like, mate, whatever. Whatever. Like, just put us, if you have to put us in a car together, like, Josh was like, no, what do you want? So I said, well, can we put Tony in the 765 LT? Because I've often spoken about in this podcast, I think it's one of the most underrated modern supercars. Yeah. I loved my experience in it. I thought you maybe would enjoy it, and you've driven Black Series 812 comp.
Yeah.
We ticked a lot of the boxes.
Yeah.
And so apart from new GT3 RS, which even I haven't driven, I was like, that's the one that I want Tony to experience.
Yeah. Well, again, like when he said, like, drive the 765 LT, and you're almost like, because I wasn't that bothered about driving it. He said, no, mate, go and drive the 765. You haven't driven it. Go and drive it. Yeah. And he never really said anything apart from, you know, go and drive it.
Because I didn't want to give you any preconception. On the Black Series and stuff like that, I was happy to kind of...
Yeah.
But I just wanted you to just go and have an authentic experience. Also, because I don't know many other people who've driven the 765 LT, so not really anyone to bounce off.
Yeah.
I regretted not being a little bit more forceful in my choice. Because I was like, you know, everyone was grabbing. And you know that thing where, like...
really polite.
Well, because, you know, everyone else was like, mate, I'll take that. And I was like, no one's going, just give me a car, Josh, I don't care. And I was like, this is a bit... So I just said, mate, honestly, just give me a car. I don't care. I'm super happy to be here.
Yeah.
now I do sound like an arrogant prick. He gave me the Aston V12 Vantage convertible. Stunning spec, white with the red interior. Beautiful car, quicksilver exhaust. Just not the, you know, this was a 40 minute drive, maybe an hour, when you wanted to literally light your balls on fire. It was one of those drives. You wanted to literally just be nuts to the wall, like, and get back. Highways, and like, thank God I survived.
Highways, tunnels
like just accelerating from the lights, loads of crazy. Everything else that was there, there was the new Lamborghini Countach, there was a Lamborghini Sian, there was an 812 GTS with a full Novatec exhaust, there was an RA with the most awful exhaust I've ever had on in my life.
STO,
like everything loud and shouting full of, and I was just like, hello everybody.
Hello.
In the boat, just cruising. I never heard the car once because everyone alongside me was louder. And so, as I say, like, cool car, and I like the coupe when I drove it, but I was just a bit like, oh, I should have been a bit more lair. I should have said, sorry, Josh, can I take... I would have taken the 812 comp at that point. Anyway, as I say, I sound spoiled, still cool opportunity. And I still had the time of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad we went on that drive. But tell us everything, because reminder.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Tony is a McLaren hater. He has not come back to the fold like I have. I've worked closely with the McLaren team over the last 2 or 3 years. I'm fully back on board with the brand.
Are you back on board?
Totally. After that Artura experience.
All right,
the 720S Spider experience, which I loved, and then the Artura experience, which I loved. I'm back on board. I get what's called innocent until proven guilty in my mind with McLaren.
Fair. No problem.
And I loved the 765 RT. So tell us all.
So I got in it.
Mm-hmm.
Started it up. It started. Flipping hell. This is a win. and started up.
Whoop, whoop.
No key not found. It was completely fine. Started up. Nice noise.
Mm-hmm.
Car was shaking. Had a bit of character to it.
A lot of vibration.
Don't look like it's got any soundproofing at all. Maybe a little bit, but cool. No problem. So drives it out of the garage. Leaves it running for a while. All the guys are gathering around. We're sitting around. We then get going. As I pulled out of the driveway or the garage or whatever, we turned left out of this road. In 10 metres, I thought to myself, flipping hell, it's one of the best cars I've ever driven.
Yes, it is.
And I honestly can say, hand on heart now, it's the best car I've definitely driven this year. Yeah. It is incredible to the point where I had to stop myself. I actually thought, well, that car was literally built for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute lunatic, yep. That car.
It's actually terrifying.
It's terrifying. Yeah. It's got character like a Ferrari. Speed like a hypercar.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly fast. The brakes, very good. Not like that really, there's a little bit of travel, not a really long brake like the most other McLarens have. What else can I say? I mean, I can't really think of too many minuses.
It's psychotic as a car.
It's unbelievable. The two real things that I picked up on, one was there is still a little bit of turbo lag from that engine. It is still a little bit...
It's part of that engine's character, though, I think. I'm not wholly against that boost feeling. I think it adds to the experience. But you're right. If you're really urgent on it, you're a bit like, come on, because yeah. It's so quick.
But not like a 720S. Nowhere near like a 720S. It's loads more urgent than a 720S. And as well, I think it's because they've got them stupid, really thin front tyres, maybe the carbon tug as well. There was still some understeer. McLaren really suffered from understeer, obviously, and there was still some understeer. But apart from that, mate, I mean, I'm being so, so critical. It's definitely one of the best cars I've ever driven, for sure. And it's a car that would be really, really, really high on my list to own. And I said to you when I got out.
At the meeting point,
I'm going to buy one.
Yeah, I said to him, what, they're going on Auto Trader? He goes, I've already looked.
Because this car is like nothing I've ever driven. Mm. It was incredible. And then once I'd got back and after I'd
calmed down,
put my brain back in gear, I realised that it was still a McLaren. As good as it was, it will probably break.
Bullshit.
And and you said to me as well, if you had to pick between the McLaren and the Black, initially I did say the McLaren. After I'd had some real thought about it, I would still go the Black Series as a whole, as a car, for the many reasons that the McLaren is like 10 or 0.
Mm.
You can't stop it's a flipping wild animal.
Yeah,
you said to me you got it for an hour to blast up that mountain and come back, I'd have the McLaren all day.
Mm-hmm.
If you said to me, you've got to drive 900 miles, you go and do a track day, and then you come back out of the Black Series all day.
The thing about that LT is it genuinely feels like McLaren Automotive, the engineers, the designers, looked at all the feedback, right? Looked at the general consensus of, you know, McLarens are all boring, and they're all just too easy to drive. And they literally went, F you.
Yeah.
Like, F you all.
Yeah.
And
fair play to them.
Yeah, right. That's what you want? You want to... And they did it.
Yeah.
And they delivered this unbelievable behemoth of a... And all of these things are positives. Terrifying.
Yeah.
unhinged, manic, psychotic car in the best way possible. They are. I drove that car up to Alexander's Prestige and back. The whole way on the motorway, I'm like, it never stops vibrating. It never stops shaking. The urgency, because I believe they shortened all the gear ratios to increase that urgency. So the way the thing wants to take off, and it's just...
And it keeps going.
Angry, and it keeps going.
Yeah.
And I've said it, I've not said it enough. It is so overlooked, that car. Mm. And this is the problem that McLaren suffer. And I remember when I did the Arturo piece, I said, you know, painted the whole picture, you know, I haven't had a great time with McLaren and blah, 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 blah. And the McLaren team were like, look, we get it, but when are you gonna give us a break on the whole the car's brake? I said, unfortunately.
Stop braking.
Well, no, they have stopped braking, mate. Mm. This is the point. But I said, the problem is you don't realize the cliff edge that you're not on, or sorry, the vertical wall you're having to climb. Mm. So the fact that no one has really bought into that LT proves everything that's wrong, or the challenge you face, because just like you said, it's probably going to break. It's probably going to lose a shit ton of money.
It's confidence.
Like, it's confidence.
Yeah,
and they are
in the brand.
Probably now delivering great products. I say, I know they're still struggling with Artura deliveries, but the Artura product is fantastic. The 765 LT, as we've now both realized, is unbelievable. 750S, let's come on to in a second, but who was it? Must have been Rory Reed's review of the 750S, maybe? Or somebody. I can't remember. Maybe it was the Top Gear piece. Anyway, and they touched on the nervousness around just this reliability, price point. And the more and more that we keep reminding people, the more and more people are nervous. I said, and that's what you're up. That's why I have to keep mentioning it, because everyone's thinking it. And if we just don't talk about it, then we're in trouble. So, long story short, it really upsets me and frustrates me that
me too.
Had those negative experiences. We all feel that way, because what a car.
Yeah.
And it made me want one. Do you know what I mean? Like you, I was like, yes, I wasn't wrong. Mm. This thing is amazing.
Yeah.
And but I would be nervous. I mean, I couldn't afford to go and buy a £300,000 car, but...
Yes, you could.
No, I couldn't.
Don't tell lies.
So I'm so glad you had the chance. And yeah, huge thanks to the Lee Collection for all of those experiences. As I say, some other fun bits that we haven't touched on, which will be in the main channel video. So they are coming soon to wrap up our trip, the last two videos on the main channel.
You made a video about the sand dune, didn't you?
Yeah, some short footage of the sand dunes. So we talked about it on the episode last week, so that was amazing. So I said 750S, let's touch on that. Mm. Initial reviews came out. Obviously the car, not massively different, I think, compared to like a DB12. It's like 30% new. People seem to love it though. I'll hold my breath until I've got behind the wheel of it, but people seem to be very positive about it.
Don't most journalists like most McLarens though, right? In general, and we have never ever sat on here, mate, really, in general, and said that they the cars are bad. They're just unreliable.
Fair, yeah. Well,
McLaren have always made good cars.
Good point.
They just, from where I sit, they don't work, but most of the time they don't work.
But is the bigger problem not, because, okay, fine, I'm not going to tackle you on don't worry, but the depreciation, I think that's maybe,
it all comes around to confidence, mate.
The whole
thing is the depreciation, and it all ties in.
Yeah.
It all ties in together. You know, if something doesn't work, product doesn't work, or the depreciation's bad, or no one has confidence in the brand, this is what happens.
But look at the Roma and the 296. Ferrari aren't a million miles from heading in that direction at the minute.
I agree. And
two cars that are depreciating like lead bricks and having issues.
They're having a bomb. But you could almost say that about 992 Turbo S.
And GT3s, apparently.
And we say that 992 Turbo I definitely is an all-round sports car. It's one of the best you can buy. I mean, they're absolutely tanking at the moment.
110? 115?
Not retail, no.
No, what are they retail?
130, 140 for a bit of miles on.
Still not that bad. They're what, 40 grand depreciation?
No, but that's the problem. If you got one list, people were paying 50, 60 over for them.
If you're paying overs, you've got to be prepared to lose it all.
Absolutely, yeah. But they've still got some way to fool them. I think there's too many of them.
My car's going in for its big service next week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's got all the recalls done.
2 years old, is it?
No. Because remember I said I'm going to bring it forward.
Oh, okay.
Because I want to get brakes checked. It's got to get the cracked window replaced. It's got a few recalls.
You haven't it serviced early?
Yeah, well, at least a health check to get. I don't know if I get it serviced.
Don't need
it serviced,
no.
But I say I want to get the brakes checked after the track day and the road trip. There was a chip on the wheel when they changed the tyres. So they've ordered a replacement wheel from the factory. There's the cracked window that I want to get look at.
Yeah,
and I also want to give. I want to get the car given a once over.
Fair enough.
Because I've had two oil refills. Which I've done myself, just topping up the oil. So maybe an oil change just to make sure that's all hunkered all week.
Yeah, I used to do that with, I've done that with both of my previous gen cars. They weren't due a service, but I just told them to drop the oil out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just go and have a look around it. I'll know how that goes on. But watching the 750 review and hearing the fact that, you know, it's only 30% new parts, blah, blah, it got me thinking because DB12, a lot more new parts, but looked very similar to DB11.
Mm.
750S. Identical visually to a 720S, even though under the skin, apparently a few more changes. New Panamera just launched.
Mm.
Basically looks identical to the old one, give or take a few bumpers.
Uh-huh.
What else have we seen? New Cayenne, which looks like a Macan.
Yeah.
We saw a couple of those actually in Australia, weirdly.
It definitely looks like a Macan from the front, but from the back.
It feels like, and of course there are lots of cars that buck the trend, but it feels like quite a few manufacturers, definitely more in the sports car world, are starting to play it very safe on design, if really keeping designs very similar. So a lot of companies are coming out saying, oh, you know, we've under the skin a huge amount of changes and all this new technology. And like, okay, Range Rover is a bad example because they only bring out a new car every 10 years. But even new Range Rovers, you know, it's a little hard to tell without squinting between new and old. So why do we think this is? What is the gameplay here? Have we seen the end of great automotive design? Is there a reason why manufacturers are choosing not to spend lots of money or make a lot of work in this area? Is it important? Because for me, and this is where I'll leave it off, for me, if a car doesn't look wildly different, I don't tend to get massively overexcited because I'm like, okay, fine, it might be better under the skin, but I could buy the old one and no one's going to really know if I'm in the old one or the new one. G-Wagons are probably the ultimate example of that.
The problem is, mate, sometimes these manufacturers, they can't win. They get slagged off for bringing a new car that looks up completely different to the old one, like the BMW M2 or the new M3. They go, oh, that looks terrible compared to the old one. And then they bring a car out that looks similar to the old car and you go, oh, it's too similar. I mean, they cannot win.
But surely, firstly, design needs to be challenging, right? For any design to be forward-thinking, to be futuristic, to be... People just don't like change. And, you know, I saw a few comments on my M3 post on Instagram. Be like, oh, notice how you haven't shown the front end. People are still banging on about that front grille.
Looks amazing.
I think it looks fucking fantastic. Yeah. Just, I like the photos from the back. So I think 720S was a great example of that. People going, this is the weirdest looking car now. People get used to it. So I understand what you mean by you can't win, but you think that's why manufacturers are doing it? They're playing it so they're going, well, we don't want social media to judge the looks of this car, so we're just not really going to change the way it looks, but make a load of changes under the skin.
No, I think sometimes they just, you know, maybe they just think that if it's not broken, don't fix it. You know, like if a product sells and it still looks up to date, you know, there's some manufacturers that change their cars every 3 or 4 years, Mercedes, all of a sudden the previous model looks really, really old because they keep updating them so quickly. But there's only, you know, some of these manufacturers, they must hit a wall and they go, flipping, what are we going to do next? You know, what is next? Short of putting guns on and stupid spoilers, and then we go in on them and saying, looks like something's crashed through Halfords.
Yeah, no, but I disagree. I mean, automotive design has to be one of the leading sort of levels of design in the world. We've seen it over the years, and greats like Pininfarina and Touring, all these people like that, have set the bar. And look at the way back in the 50s and the 60s American car design, but there's icons that we've seen. I mean, the 911, you know, whatever, you can judge about that, but there have been plenty of icons over the year, and it just feels like we're getting more and more new cars get unveiled and we all go, oh, So it looks like the old one. Like, and I don't think that used to happen. 10, 15 years ago, a new generation, a new model would look, feel, and be different. And that was something to get excited about.
Then. We have big tech jumps then, you know. The tech jumps are less now, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And actually, when you look at design of a car, when you're a manufacturer, I would suspect the biggest challenge that I would say these manufacturers have got, especially let's use 911, Range Rover, Golf as a comparison, right? We want you, this is the designers, the manufacturers, the designers, we want you to make a new modern car, but it must still represent what we already sold. It must still look like a Golf. It must still look like a 911. It must still look like a Range Rover. And that's harder, I think, than designing a new car. Mm. It's like the Aston Martin thing. It must still look like an Aston Martin because they've got a certain look. They've got a certain way about them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's harder. But then you probably get to a point and you can't really do no more because technology now is right at the forefront. And we speak about this a lot, especially with electric cars, you know. The battery tech and everything, all the tech inside is right 2023. Now, it's right now. How much further can that move on? Tech is incredible now, especially when you look back, like you said, 10 or 15 years. I mean, I sometimes get in 10 or 15 year old cars and they look, you think, flipping hell, how was you getting in this 10 years ago and thinking this was state of the art? You know, but also, if you put yourself back 10 or 15 years ago, when you got in there, you'd go, wow, this is state of the art. But there's got to be a ceiling. There has to be a wall where the wall get the bar's always been set so high now with design, like you said, because it's leading. There has to be a point where you can't do much more.
I disagree. I disagree.
What and do you want them to do then?
I think the prime example is EVs, because I think EV design is next level. I think so many manufacturers are smashing it out of the park when it comes to EV design because they're fresh, they're different. We're getting new shapes, new models, new lines, the ability to use the EV basis, you know, the fact that not needing grills and flat floors and things like that to come up with new and interesting shapes and designs where it feels like combustion engine cars are kind of being left behind a bit where they're just going, well, I'll just update a bumper or two, or, you know, just keep it fairly similar and, you know, we'll just make sure that it's...
Well, there'd be two reasons for that. I'm not going to fight you.
I'm just having a conversation rather than an argument.
No, but there'd be two reasons. The grills, electric cars don't need grills because they don't need to be...
That's the whole point.
Down.
That's what I'm saying. They get to use that to come up with a different and exciting and a new design.
Absolutely. And then as well, on the flip side, these manufacturers and the governments, they want us all to buy electric cars. So maybe they're concentrating on designing mega-looking spaceship futuristic electric cars, leave the combustion cars as they are, as in they're fine, because they're not really the future. This is the future. This is the next car.
I think that might be it.
Maybe it is,
I think that might be it because obviously, as we know, manufacturers are 10 years further down the line than we are right now. You know, so I remember going to an event. Oh, by the way, I've got the i5 coming.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Is it next week or 2 weeks? So I've got a 6-month loan of the i5 M60.
Wow.
Which I actually
the one
am
that
super excited about. Yeah, the Super Larry.
Oh, wow.
One.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for that.
Yeah.
But prime example, I remember attending an event in 2019 at BMW in Munich at the headquarters at the factory. And they brought out Hans Zimmer, the legendary film composer, as like we have brought Hans Zimmer on board to help develop the sound of our electric cars. So that was 2019, and the i5 is the first car that he's put his handprint footprint melody on. So you didn't play around with some of the sounds.
I did play around with noise.
In the energetic mode and stuff.
Sounds like sport a sport mode and that.
No, so there's one called energetic, which makes it sound like a film score, unbelievably.
Right.
So, you know, that's 4 years down the line. He's just the sound part. So I think that's what it is. I think designers and manufacturers are pushing so hard to make EVs exciting and attractive. And it's a new world for them. They've got so many opportunities because the actual blueprint is different.
Yeah.
Where from the combustion engine vehicle, they're just like, look, just give it a light refresh. It works. We don't need to, because that model line is going to die in 5 years. Yeah, no. The Panamera will be all electric in its next generation,
imminently,
most likely.
Yeah.
And so therefore, that's when we want it to have a whole new look and represent a whole new vibe.
Will it exist? Will it be a Taycan Cross something instead of a... Will it actually say Panamera anymore?
They got rid of the estate one, didn't they? For now,
Sport
at least.
Turismo.
Yeah, it's gone. It's just the hatchback Panamera for now.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. Maybe that's why they're not putting a lot of... But, I mean, for McLaren and Aston Martin, it's maybe a little harder to argue. But still, we do know, as I say, they're so far down the line, Aston are probably already on the super hybrid or the electric DB... Oh, God knows what it's called. Yeah. But I do find it interesting.
No.
It doesn't stop me wanting a Panamera, though. Remember that conversation we had?
Oh, mate, please, literally.
I've never wanted a Panamera. I actually don't like the Panamera.
Every
like I've driven so many, and every time I'm like, God, this is a real bore. And I just literally last week I was like, oh, I've got to get a Panamera.
I know.
So weird. Oh, you know the other car I want? Senna.
No,
I want a McLaren Senna, mate. I was watching a DDE video, Daily Driven Exotics, and he took delivery of his Senna or whatever, and he was driving it around LA, went to get caught, and I was like, this is kind of cool. Like,
that do me a Senna.
Yeah, go on, Senna, what a vibe. And then literally that afternoon, I was driving through Chelsea, and I saw a Senna come the other way, and I was like, oh, mate, Senna's, what a thing.
Can't even afford a 765 looking at Senna's.
I'm so easy to impress. I'm literally like becoming like my dad, who walks into a petrol station and goes, what's this music playing? I'd love this CD. Ben, anyway, so look, we had an amazing time, say, in Australia. Glad that we could share some of those stories. Should we touch very quickly on the video that went live just now, our M3 journey?
It was the funniest thing.
I mean, funny at times, stressful for me at others. We're going to pick up on two comments that we saw a lot of, and I do know that lots of you listening don't always cross over onto the main channel and vice versa, but we had two things that we just thought we had to address.
Yeah.
Firstly... people fuming, fuming that you put standard, in inverted commas, E10 fuel in the M3.
Yeah.
People, FYI, on the fuel filler cap for the M3, it says E5 or E10.
Or E15.
Or E15. Where do they sell E15?
It's not coming yet, but it's coming. It's coming, but the car's ready for it. So
it's a brand new modern car
that makes... absolutely no difference what fuel you put in them.
Well, we do disagree on this. Tony is a naysayer, a myth debunker on fuels. Yeah. I've had enough Kool-Aid thrown in my direction from the likes of Energy, so Esso and Shell and all these lots. I do believe that a V-Power or one of those things is a different product. Tony thinks it's all the same.
It loads faster, apparently.
No. I'm not saying that.
Can really feel the difference.
I'm not saying that. I do think it is a better fuel for your engine. I do think it's a cleaner fuel. I do think it helps maintain the health of the engine. But I'd be fascinated on an MPG test. I don't know how we arrange that. Any fuel companies listening, I don't care who you are, if you're able to or willing to let me do some kind of test of standard fuel... the high power fuel and a synthetic fuel. Let's chuck it in. That would be so interesting.
That would be amazing.
Back
actually,
to back test. Because I think 0 to 60, Nürburgring lap, and point A to point B road trip, all three fuels would perform nearly identically.
I agree.
MPG would be the only thing I'd be interested in. I would be interested to see if the V Power maybe gave you half or 0.2 of an MPG more, because that is part of the claim.
That sounds worth it for an extra 25 per litre.
Well, okay, so Tony is an ace. Tony has never put higher rated fuel in any of his cars.
No.
Like on the GT3 road trip, always the base standard fuel.
Yeah.
But just a reminder.
Because what's wrong with it?
Brand new cars
are
built to take E10, E5, like they might say we recommend V Power or something like that, but that's because Shell spent a lot of money to get them to say so.
Yeah, or SO or any of them.
High performance engine is going to perform better theoretically with the high performance fuel.
Well, I've never noticed it,
but long story short, we couldn't believe that people were so furious,
really angry.
And I'm a big fuel person, and I really don't get
butthurt.
I don't get butthurt if I'm if I get to a petrol station and they don't have V Power, I don't like leave and go to the next one.
No,
I literally go, okay, cool, I'll just put the standard stuff in. Like even like in the, well, I couldn't do it in the 360 because that you couldn't put E10 in that because it gets all clogged up.
All right.
I mean, fair. You could do it like once.
Yeah, well, I don't drive 25-year-old cars.
So. Fair. If you have an older car, I get it, but it's a brand new M3. So firstly, we were quite shocked by that and wanted to clarify that.
And I drive one daily, by the way. Do you know what? I hadn't driven my car for over a month, M3 Touring. And I drove it yesterday and I thought, flipping hell, why does this feel so familiar? And I realised I was in Australia in one.
I've
done 500 miles in one.
I genuinely want to do that test, actually. I'm going to... That's a 2024 goal, fuel test. It sounds more like a... That's a very nerdy
video.
Maybe it's a podcast episode.
I'd like to do that because then I can either stand there and go, I told you, or you can prove me wrong.
We're either going to have to do it independently
or
with a very brave... fuel scientist or fuel manufacturer. They're either going to have to really believe in their product or we're going to have to do it independently. But we're going to have to drain the tanks each time, aren't we?
Because you
have to put like 20 litres in, drive it to almost empty or like then drain it and then put... Because you can't mix, then you're going to get wrong results.
I'm going to have to get a hypnotist to convince me, but okay.
Or three identical cars. Would you accept this? Three identical cars running on three different fuels.
Lovely.
So could we get three...
Modern or not modern?
I think modern. I think modern. Oh, that's the argument, right?
I agree.
Three identical 330i's from BMW or something. Do they still make 330i's? You look to me confused. Identical and fill them each with a different fuel and then do a road test.
Yeah.
That would be great. And the other thing we want to pick up on is the fury of us taking the M3 Touring onto the beach.
It was the funniest day we ever had.
I mean, it was amazing.
Well, I thought it was hilarious because when we got stuck, he was really flapping.
Well... Firstly, let's just clarify a few things. I did a lot of research into this in terms of what beaches we could drive on. Oh my God, a ton of research.
Oh, I'm not going to
just go willy-nilly and drive on any old beach that I saw. Which beaches we could drive on, which were the easiest to get on and off, which were the safest to drive on, which had the most, you know, hard sand, the approach and de-approach angles, the ability of the BMW. I did a lot of research.
We paid our
tickets, we did everything. Obviously, there was an inherent risk because we got stuck.
Yeah. you didn't, I did.
You did.
Yeah.
We had gone on and off the beach using the same entry and exit points about three or four times before
Correct.
We got stuck. So everyone going like, well, of course, it was uphill. Like, don't give him such a hard time. I gave him a hard time because I drove on and off the beach.
I just piled in.
Fine. And Tony, the first time he tries it, gets sunk.
Yeah.
I really lost my cool. I was really... because, as I said on the main channel video, I really didn't want to call BMW and be like, sorry, guys, we've got your car stuck in the sand.
But you know what? It's absolutely fine, mate, because we're good friends and I understand you have little farts and tempers every now and then. That's fine. I don't listen to you.
Yeah.
But also, it might actually be a little lesson for you because no one died.
We were fine.
We were fine. In 30 minutes, we were out. There's always someone to help. And as I was piling in and thinking, oh, I'm going to get stuck here, I was already thinking, well, there's some pickup trucks up there, so if we get stuck, I'm going to get towed out anyway. So it's not the end of the world.
Can we blame your technique at that moment?
Oh, it was completely my fault. I just piled
in. Because a lot of people were saying, why on earth are you taking that car onto the beach? It was fine.
No, yeah. I just went in the deep bit, basically. I just ballsed it up,
He ballsed it up.
Yeah, that's what happens. It's better than going in a wall, which I'm due, by the way. That's due.
That's definitely due. And we, spent well over $100 getting that car fully valet cleaned, by the way.
Was $100?
Yeah, you didn't know. It was $125 that.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah. Because I said to them, it's all got to go.
So it's all
people were like, yeah, kind of at least washed the underside.
I wonder why the radio weren't in there when we come out.
that car, you could have licked that car. We got rid of it as much, of course, sand is sand, but it was immaculate. We actually think we handed that car back to BMW in slightly better shape than it was dropped off. But we took all the care and precaution that we felt like we should or we could. And
you did.
I understand that some people were perturbed by it and upset by it, but...
Anyway. By the way, I would have took my own car on there, by the way.
Yeah, I would have taken my own car on there as well.
Straight 100%.
And that's why I did that research, to make sure that was the beach we could do it on.
Yeah.
And we were totally fine. And if we hadn't got stuck, no one would have had anything really to say. It was like a lovely experience. And
nice time.
The car was great. And as far as I know, BMW Australia were all fine with it. We had a laugh and a joke with
It could have been in the ocean.
It could have been in the ocean. or, as you say, on its roof. But anyway, we just wanted to address that because we were just a bit like, what? That brings the end to our our return to the studio.
No, I've had a nice time. What a
lovely place
to be. We should do this again next week.
We will. We might. I'm just checking the legality of what I'm allowed to discuss.
Uh-oh.
We will discuss the Gordon Murray T50 next week.
Will we?
Because the first reviews are out. Oh. Or review, I think. Top
should
Gear.
I go and look at a couple of them and then what?
Yeah. Should yeah, I? Go watch the Top Gear review.
All right, mate.
Go watch the Top Gear review.
Who does that nowadays?
Who does Top Gear? I think it's it was Ollie Q that did it, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll definitely discuss that. And there's maybe something more that I can discuss, but we'll see. Anyway, we'll be back with you next week. So if you're listening to us, thank you so much for checking us out. You can give us a review via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you
can
want to.
Can they?
They can, absolutely.
Right.
I would love a 5-star, but if you want to give us one, we understand. if you're watching us here on YouTube, make sure to subscribe, turn on notifications. We're getting towards the end of our year, but we've got a number of episodes left before we wrap things up for our annual Christmas break. So as I say, stay around and we'll be back with you for another episode next week. Bye-bye. Bye.
See ya.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.